Iraq, on its own now and trying to keep the wheels from flying off a fragile democracy, but it's caught amidst sectarian tensions that apparently U.S. troops were only papering over. Now that those troops are gone, it's beginning to look, in Baghdad, a lot like 2006. This morning, a coordinated wave of bombings across Baghdad killed at least 57 people, wounded almost 200. Iraqi officials say 11 locations in all were attacked in an apparent coordinated campaign of violence designed to wreak havoc. The blasts were the worst violence to hit the country in months. They come as a political crisis between Iraq's Sunni and Shiite political factions is also complicating matters. Iraq's Shiite Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has demanded that Kurdish authorities hand over Iraq's Sunni vice president, he's the highest-ranking Sunni political leader in Iraq, Tariq al-Hashimi. Here's Nouri al-Maliki speaking to the parliament on Iraqi television with a translator, courtesy of our partners, the BBC.
We don't have a magic wand to use so that we can establish democracy and people will be convinced of the new regime and to forget the old mentality or to convince others who still believe in sectarian or ethnical doctrine.
Nouri al-Maliki, the Prime Minister of Iraq, on the defensive there. Joining us to discuss this and more is Michael Waheed Hanna, a fellow at the Century Foundation. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for coming in. And this is a disturbing development, the violence in Baghdad, but it seems to have been provoked by the political crisis that Nouri al-Maliki brought on by actually accusing this Sunni leader of funding death squads, of basically operating a death squad inside Iraq.
Well, I think one thing to remember about Iraq is that it is a violent place. It was a violent place when American forces were there, and it's a violent place now, and it's probably going to be a violent place for years to come. And so it's probably a mistake to link every outbreak of coordinated attacks or violence to American troop presence or politics. So this has been a constant in Iraq for years. Of course, the backdrop to all this is the latest political crisis. And again, with that, I think perspective is useful because Iraq has faced numerous political crises in recent years. And I think this is probably of that kind as opposed to a difference in kind.
Listen to the voice of Tariq al-Hashimi. Here he is speaking about how he claims he's been treated by the government of Iraq.
Yesterday, my residence was stormed, doors destroyed by soldiers, computers and files were taken away. They didn't leave till 1:30 in the morning. I'm supposed to be a vice president and deserve a better treatment. Thanks to President Talabani, I have managed to escape to Kurdistan, where I am now.
Jalal Talabani, of course, the president of Iraq. He's a Sunni. He's a Kurd. The vice president, Mr. Hashimi, a Sunni, and Nouri al-Maliki, a Shiite. This reminds me of the weird sort of power-sharing arrangement in Lebanon, which has been less than effective in governing that country. Is that what we're seeing here in Baghdad?
It's probably slightly more complicated than it used to be. Sectarian identity politics have evolved away from where they were, the very stark lines that we saw during the sectarian civil war. There are those favored Sunnis who work quite closely with Maliki and the government now. And the opposition to Maliki has never been able to get its act together to bring the government down because there are enough players who see a vested interest in being in the government and a real fear of being in the opposition. So it's a pretty complicated picture that doesn't necessarily break down on purely sectarian lines, although there is clearly a hardening of sectarian identity involved.
You know, a lot of analysts describe that, you know, this was an inevitable consequence of the U.S. troops leaving. Once the occupation was gone, there was going to be this devolution back into sectarian battles. But I'm wondering if the better analysis is, in fact, this is what would have happened regardless. This is what Saddam Hussein was keeping, bottled up, and that once the dictatorship was removed, once Saddam Hussein was removed, then these forces, which date to pre-Iraq into Ottoman times, have actually come back to haunt Iraq.
Well, I mean, what I would say is that we saw a sectarian civil war happen in Iraq under the American watch.
In 2006.
2006, 2007.
Yeah.
We've seen really dirty sectarian politics happening in Iraq while the American presence was there. We saw this in the run-up to the American withdrawal with some coordinated arrests of supposedly formerly Ba'athist leaders. And so, you know, this isn't coming out of the blue. It's something that has been building for months now.
And what are the people of Iraq to do? Listen to some voices, courtesy of our partners, the BBC.
Innocent people. What have we done wrong? Those who were killed were either ordinary citizens or civil servants. What crime have we committed? If you are unable to run government, leave it.
and listen to this citizen. This is a level of cynicism I think that is familiar in Iraq, but is still disturbing.
The politicians fight for posts and kill people. What did these people do? They were just workers.
Can Iraqis have any faith in this government setup right now?
Probably not. The government simply does not work. I mean, I think when you look at this political crisis, and it's obviously a big black mark for Iraq and for the prime minister, and it is part of a trend of consolidation of power, but it's also a function of a system of politics that doesn't work, where people can't be in the opposition. And even when you have this consolidation of power, you don't get results on the other end. And that's a big problem. Services, corruption, these are things that simply are facets of how Iraqi politics work.
New York Times had a blistering lead editorial yesterday just calling Nouri al-Maliki completely incompetent for provoking this political crisis. Are we looking at a Saigon 1975 scenario here where everything that the U.S. has done to try to preserve democracy is going to just evaporate into some sort of chaos?
I don't think that's the case, to be honest. I think we are probably going to see Iraq muddle through. We'll probably see more of the same. We saw the government formation crisis evolve over months. And I think there isn't a constituency in Iraq right now that could lead the country back to civil war or broad-based insurgency. So I think it will be a muddled mess and more of the same. And obviously, that's not great for the Iraqi people, but it's also well short of perhaps worst-case scenarios.
Although worst-case scenario, they're on the border. Iraq borders Syria, and you've got both countries, a former Ba'athist regime in Iraq, a current Ba'athist regime in Damascus, and instability on both sides of the border. Implications of what's going on in Iraq, do you think it's relevant to what's happening in Syria? We're going to talk about that later this hour.
Well, absolutely. Clearly, the Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, sees what's happening in Syria and potential spillover effects and linkages on sectarian lines as possibly destabilizing the situation in Iraq. So clearly, they're thinking in those terms.
Stay with us. We're going to talk about the implications for Syria a little later this hour with Michael Waheed Hanna, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation. Reacting this morning to the violence in Baghdad, a coordinated wave of bombings across Baghdad, killing at least 57 people, wounding almost 200. Michael, stay with us.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.